This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with Detective Jason Howe right now. We're talking about police reform, specifically as it pertains to domestic violence calls. When an officer shows up, sees signs of distress or violence or something that's not right, and rather than walking away, or even if the victim or the perpetrator are like, ah, it's good, you can go, that they don't just leave, that there's stronger policies in place for that to take place, where someone can actually get the help that they need. We obviously saw a giant failing of this in the case of Gabby Petito. And let's start there. I want to kind of work through this. I know you teach about this at the Police Academy. What are your thoughts on how all of that took place and how the system can be changed?
Yeah, so first off, I think it's important that, domestic violence doesn't have a particular demographic. It affects everyone across all kinds of socioeconomic parameters.
Sure.
So it does affect a lot of people. I think that, with law enforcement, there's only so much you can do for a victim.
Yeah.
And then the victims, they fall into this cycle of violence where there's, basically a violent act that takes place. There's a makeup period and then a recurring violent act can follow. So it's kind of hard to get a time frame on when these incidents could occur, and having a pro-arrest stance, that may not have even saved her, but it could have saved her that day.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing about it. We have in our systems, especially where I'm at, built-in hold periods. They're basically, 48-hour holds to allow people to cool off and think about what took place. And these things tend to be helpful. And when we train new officers, we tell them that this is why those laws exist. No one ever wants to have to be in the position to really take somebody to jail, but that's just the way our system is created.
Sure.
And unfortunately, jail is sometimes a place that allows people to cool off, especially with domestic violence incidents. It doesn't mean that they're guilty. That's up to the court and the juries to determine whether someone's guilty or not. But these 48-hour holds and these pro-arrest laws and policies are in place to kind of help defuse the incidents that kind of took place, especially in a situation like the Petito case.
Wasn't there a pro-arrest law where they were arrested to begin with? Isn't that accurate? But it wasn't really followed?
Yeah, and I think some of the officers, they probably got investigated internally for those issues. I think one might have got suspended, and you still see the quarterbacking. Could you have done something better? And then the detective that, I think he's a detective now, the officer that was involved in that, he has to, get photographed and shown, and the stories repeat about this particular case just because there wasn't an arrest. Mm-hmm. And, shortly after the civil case took place, the newer images got released, and they looked even more difficult to look at.
And what was disturbing about a lot of it, when you look at the images, because we only saw that first round, and she didn't visibly look harmed, but then the second round, it's like, oh my goodness, if you were there, you couldn't have not noticed it.
Yes, there's blood on her face, there's abrasions, so clearly some altercation did take place with the second round of images. Now, whether or not she cleaned up at the time, but there was still just this whole emotional onslaught, all these negative vibes between the two. And I think he even mentioned, that the officer during that investigation mentioned that the relationship was toxic. So there were indicators that were present that probably showed that these two parties probably needed to be separated, and it would probably be separated longer than, the 12 hours or however long they were separated.
Now, with something like this, are they required to make an arrest, even if the victim, in this case, Gabby Petito, is saying, no, he's fine, I started it, or whatever the victim's going to say to try and get the officers out of there so their significant other doesn't get in trouble for what they've done to them. Is it required for them to say, yeah, please take them away? Or can they stop the arrest if they say, no, we're good, we're good, we're good?
So not necessarily required. There is some discretion that is that takes place in every decision law enforcement officers make. I think the biggest issue is to look at what your department policy requires. And there are several agencies that do have a pro-arrest stance when it comes to particularly domestic violence incidents. Some jurisdictions do have laws that are mandatory arrest laws. Mm-hmm. Speaking of where I'm at, we have one particularly when a domestic violence order is in place and that order is violated, then the officers there are required to make an arrest. Mm-hmm. But that's once the domestic violence order has been taken out and served on the defendant and they violate it. But when it comes to the actual domestic assault itself, you know, if there's no order in place, the officers do have some discretion. But again, there are things out there that help domestic violence victims get out of the situation. They could be 48-hour holds. They could be domestic yeah. violence shelters. The officers should look into some of these aspects and again, follow your department policy. That's always the best practice. Those policies exist for a reason, and officers should be familiar with them and follow them.
How are we across the country on this sort of a policy? Is this common in most departments? Is like percentage wise, what would you say?
You know, there's several departments across this country. Sure. And each state, you know, can have its own different laws with regards to domestic violence. There are laws in place that mandate that domestic violence protective orders mm-hmm. are basically in effect from law to law. So we give full faith and credit to other state domestic violence orders. So there are laws in place that say these domestic violence protective orders shall be enforced regardless of which state you're in. But when it comes to the actual police department's policies, they can vary from agency to agency. Again, I think there's been more of a push in the last decade or so to make sure that this pro-arrest stance is kind of the framework for most domestic violence responses. But as far as a percentage, it'd be hard to put a number on it.
It certainly would. I mean, what we saw with the Petito case was, disturbing. The way that the officer interacted with them, it was, you really very much got the buddy-buddy vibe of, hey, dude, I get it, you know. I don't know. I mean, obviously, that I'm paraphrasing, that wasn't said by that means by at all, but I mean, we also then saw allegations against one of the officers from a former relationship of that person being abusive as well. So it almost, you see these situations come up, and it's, I think, nearly impossible to prevent, you know, every which possible combination we could have. But you get an individual in there like that, that maybe also is not the greatest human being to the people in their personal lives, and they see someone else in that same situation, it almost becomes relatable in a sort of a sick way.
Correct. And again, as I mentioned in the very beginning, there is no specific demographic that domestic violence falls into. It affects everyone. It affects law enforcement officers. This is something we've had to deal with. Not to mention the stress involved in the job and everything else. You know, we have higher suicide rates than sure. the general public. And we also have issues with domestic violence, unfortunately.
Sure.
So it's just something that affects a number of people. And it's really, we have to find a way to break that cycle of violence. And removing the victim from the offender's presence is a good way to start.
Definitely. I mean, without a doubt. What about accountability, though, for officers who don't heed the rules, who don't heed the, like in this case, like the law was in place, they didn't really do anything about it, and now they've kind of moved on and they're still doing their job somewhere else. In other, you know, facets of society, in other careers one would go down, you make some sort of massive mistake that ends up with someone losing their life. You're probably not going to stay in that field very much longer or be allowed to stay in that field very much longer. I mean, obviously, police officers put their lives on the line every single day when they're doing their jobs. But at the same point, yeah, mistakes can be made. But there's also just blatant ignoring of facts of situations where horrible things happen, but we don't all that often see a whole lot of accountability. We see a lot of hush-hush. We're not going to talk about this outside of the department, and one's going to protect the other's back. And to the public, it looks horrible. And I would say most of the public, they want to like the police. I miss the days of, you know, we call it officer friendly when I was a kid. But now you just see this constant villainizing. Some of it called for, a lot of it not. There's certainly bad apples in everything. But what to me always stands out is the let's go and still protect and hide these individuals within departments that are not good apples. Like, they just shouldn't be there. And then it ends up tainting everyone who is just trying to do their job and do the right thing. I mean, that does seem to be a big issue from a PR standpoint on the outside on how these sort of things are viewed.
Yeah. A lot of that focus is also the focus of police reform laws that are going on across America. Mm-hmm. Even in my jurisdiction, you know, we're talking about opening up public databases that allow you to search for the officer's name to see if they've had any disciplinary actions, more emphasis on Brady lists when it comes to officers and their accountability and their truthfulness. Yeah. When they're conducting themselves in the profession of law enforcement. So there are some reforms taking place to kind of prohibit some of this agency hopping as it is from where officers go from one agency to another because of some kind of misconduct. Yeah. Or the fact that they're not a very good officer to start with. A lot of that comes back to training, you know, your field training process and also the officer's knowledge of their own departmental policies. I think departments are really good when it comes to some accountability as far as they have policies in place for internal affairs investigations. You know, no one wants to be quarterbacked and have every small mistake turn into a career-ending mistake. But there are lives at stake when some of the decisions that we have to make. They're important decisions, and you have to kind of have a good grasp of how this job works and what your policies are.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Jason Howe, detective, thank you so much for your insight on that. I have a few more questions, and we'll have another segment continuing this conversation in just a bit. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss that. It is on the way. My name's Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.